It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. We have a huge show planned for you. East Carolina men's basketball will play its final home game of the year on Saturday afternoon as the UConn Huskies will visit Williams Arena Menchie's Coliseum in what will be a 2 o'clock tip-off on ESPNU. To get the scouting report on the Huskies, we will hear from UConn beat writer Dom Amore from the Hartford Courant. The 2020 East Carolina football schedule was announced a week and a half ago, so we caught up with Director of Athletics John Gilbert to talk about that and a whole lot more. Last but certainly not least, General Manager of the Dirtbags, Trey Daly, joined us to talk travel baseball as the East Carolina roster is loaded with former Dirtbags. Before we go to that interview with Dom Amore, here's a look back at what took place on Friday for ECU Athletics. The 17th-ranked baseball Pirates suffered an 11-5 loss to Indiana in the first game for ECU in the Keith LeClair Classic. Lane Hoover and Zach Agnos had two hits each for the Pirates in the loss. Now ECU will take on 13th-ranked Ole Miss after the Rebels open play in Greenville with a 6-2 win over High Point on Friday afternoon. First pitch on Saturday afternoon is scheduled for 4:30 against the Rebels. Courtney Oliver and the ECU softball team won two games on Friday at the Liberty Spring Classic. The Pirates beat Fairfield 4-3 in the day's first game before shutting out Yale 5-0, while in the process extending their win streak to 6 games. The Pirates played air-free softball in Game 1, and that allowed them to win despite being out-hit 10-5. Pepping and Woodall combined on the shutout against the Bulldogs in the day's second game. The Pirates will play a single game on Saturday against Butler before playing Hofstra and also host Liberty on Sunday. However, now let's preview the home finale for Pirate Hoops and hear from Dom Amore, the UConn men's basketball beat writer from the Hartford Courant.
Now we're very excited to be joined by Dom Amore, the UConn men's basketball beat writer from the Hartford Courant. Dom, welcome back to the show.
Anytime, particularly if you're excited to have me. I don't get that much. So
very excited, Dom, about the matchup again. Hard to believe with the year is going by fast, but understand You're coming to Greenville. Very excited to have you, and maybe we can get you some barbecue or something down here for you to try out here in Eastern North Carolina.
I will be there. My last trip in and out of Greenville, so I'll try to soak in as much as I can, particularly in the barbecue area.
No doubt about it. Let's talk about UConn. Can you catch up fans on so far with the season and your thoughts, like your analysis on UConn basketball?
Well, it's been a fun season for them. It hasn't been as successful as they would have liked wins and losses-wise. But every game they've played has been competitive and exciting and come down to the wire. You know, they've lost 9 games by 7 points or less, and 4 of those in overtime, 3 in double overtime, and even the regulation losses were games where they had lead late. So they've played well enough to easily have 20 or 21 wins. Instead, they're 15-12. And they've played well. They've had a chance to beat every team in the conference. It would not surprise me if they're a team that everybody's looking at in the conference tournament as a threat, no matter where they're seated. So it's been that kind of season for them. They're close, but not quite there yet. And now in the last couple of weeks or a few weeks, they've been hit with some injuries, some major injuries that have depleted their roster. But they've continued to play hard and play down to the wire and play well. And, they've got some games that I'm sure they feel they can win in these last 4, and they've got to win them.
Before we go any further, tell our listeners, if they may not be aware and follow it very closely, who are those key injuries to?
Yeah, a cook, who's a freshman 6'9" shot blocker. He was among the top shot blockers in the country and in the conference, and he tore his Achilles a couple of weeks ago. That was really a devastating loss for them because he was the rim protector that they used to have in Amita Brima, and he allowed them to play very good pressure defense. Now they have to back off a little bit because they're getting blown by a lot, and they don't have the rim protector back there. So that was a big deal. And the North Carolina kid, Tyler Polley, Florida kid, who tore his ACL a few weeks ago. and that kind of robbed them of their best three-point shooter, and also a lengthy defender at the wing. So they're kind of playing without a four-man right now. They're trying to mix and match. They're using two centers who are North Carolina kids, Josh Carlton and Isaiah Whaley. They're playing them both together, which makes them a little more physical, tougher rebounding team, but quick wings give them a lot of trouble.
Some of the things that you pointed out were exactly what I was going to mention regarding Dan Hurley's ball club. A season ago, they were 16-17. This year, 15-12 with all those close losses, like you mentioned. I noticed they're 12-3 at home and just 1-7 on the road after going 1-8 on the road a year ago.
Yeah, that's the problem. They have not been able to win road games, but they did break through, get a win at Tulsa, where they had never won. And they were very close down to the wire at Houston, very close down to the wire at SMU, very close down to the wire at Villanova. So they've had they've played much better on the road. It hasn't resulted in wins, and that's one reason why if you're UConn and you have some aspirations of A, getting a higher seed in the conference tournament, B, maybe having a chance to get an NIT bid if you don't win the conference tournament. Well, then you've got to win these last couple of road games, which they have at Greenville and at Tulane. So that's, winning on the road has kind of been the one hurdle that Dan Hurley's Huskies have not yet gotten over.
Talk about senior Christian Vitale. He's averaging 15 points a ball game, 6.5 rebounds. He also does a pretty good job of distributing the ball, and he's averaging, I think, more than 2 steals a game, if I saw correctly, close to 2.5 steals a game. And he shoots more than 91% from the free throw line.
Yeah, a very good, solid all-around player. He's a guy that when they recruited him, he was kind of the sixth guy fifth guy, an afterthought to a recruiting class that was very highly regarded. And yet he's become the most impactful member of that class. He's been a starter for most of his 4 years. And, he can drive you nuts by maybe jacking up some threes that you wish he wouldn't jack up, or turning the ball over, or trying to do some things that he really doesn't do. But in this senior year, and particularly in these last 8-9 games of his senior year, he's become a much more under-control player, much more a player who limits mistakes, and yet still does the things that he does. Now, he competes very hard. He plays very hard. Plays defense very hard. A lot of those steals that he gets result in easy baskets because he makes those live steals at midcourt a lot. And he's shooting a little bit better these days. But the big thing with him is he's just a tough, gritty player, the kind of player that Dan Hurley likes and wants, even though he occasionally wants to wring his neck. But the fact is, Hurley, I think, was very fortunate to inherit him in the program, because I think he's really helped Dan instill what he wants to instill in terms of an attitude in this program. So he's a guy that UConn's really going to miss when he's gone, and they're going to be out looking for somebody to replace him. He's not going to be an easy guy to replace, because if you look at those numbers, he does a lot of things for you.
Diving into the front court, these are a couple guys you've already mentioned, North Carolina natives, Josh Carlton and Isaiah Whaley, Whaley being from Gastonia, while Carlton's from very nearby Greenville and Winterville, and really touches Greenville. And I know he had a host of fans there a season ago, like you would expect. But he's a guy that absolutely gave East Carolina fits a season ago when didn't have some of the post bodies that we have now. You have a guy like Charles Coleman. I mean, he's very raw, but at the same time, he's at least a big body that the Pirates did not have a season ago. And Josh Carlton last year in 2 games against the Pirates, he had a combined 40 points and 26 rebounds.
Yeah, Josh had a really good year last year as the most improved player, co-most improved player in the conference. He's been a little bit of a disappointment this year. He hasn't made the same kind of jump that they would have hoped he would make sophomore to junior year. But he's still a solid guy. He could still be very effective inside. But Isaiah Whaley has really been a revelation for UConn. He's a guy that barely played last year. Looked like he might be on his way out of the program, but he stuck with it, and he got bigger and stronger in the off season. And he's a guy that accepts coaching extremely well, does not make a lot of mistakes, and he's really been a huge part of UConn's recent success. He's starting now with the Cook gone, as I mentioned, and he's really, really played well. So I think from UConn's standpoint, you know, now that they have two guys down there, it could be very effective. It's just the problem is that that's all they have. So if those guys get in foul trouble, they really have to go to a small lineup, maybe more than they'd like to.
Talking about one of those smaller guys, talk about James Booknight. He started, I think, 12 ball games of the 24 in which he's played. He's averaging close to 13 points, and he hasn't shot an abundance of threes, but he's knocking them down in the 38% clip.
Yeah, he's starting to shoot more and make more threes, which opens up his game a little bit. And he's a dynamic player. He's the kind of player that teams would be used to seeing in a UConn uniform if you go back to past, you know, guys like a Rip Hamilton and some of the NBA caliber players that UConn's had. He's in that class, and that's something. He's the most dynamic and exciting player that UConn's had in quite a while. And he'll probably be the guy that you notice, not having seen UConn yet this year. He's probably the guy that y'all will notice when UConn gets down there and starts playing.
Prior to coming to Greenville, though, the Huskies will be taking on UCF later on tonight, tonight being Wednesday at the XL Center in Hartford, 7 o'clock tip-off. And this is the first time these teams have met this year. UCF has had a disappointing season after such a stellar win a year ago, but the Knights here recently did go up to Fifth Third Arena inside the Shoemaker Center at Cincinnati and win, which very few teams do.
Yeah, you know what? This league is very unpredictable, and I'm sure you guys have seen it with ECU through the course of the year. It's really hard to figure. You know, they went into Cincinnati and they won, UCF did. Then they lost at home to Tulane. If you look at UConn, obviously they lost to Tulsa at home, beat them on the road. They beat Cincinnati at home. It's that kind of league. I mean, I think when you get into the conference tournament, this is going to be a toss-up in almost any of the 12 teams are going to have a chance to win it. UCF, obviously, you lose Taco Fall, you lose Aubrey Dawkins, you lose Taylor. They've lost so many of the guys that were a big part of their team last year. So it's kind of a transitional year for Johnny Dawkins. You know he'll have them back, but this has been a bit of a disappointment. But like any team in the league, they're a threat to beat anybody or they could lose to anybody.
Well, Dom, I know you're making the trip to Greenville this weekend for the game. 2 o'clock tip-off is it ESPNU or ESPN2? One of those two. This is nationally televised. And so safe travels to you as you make your way down south to Greenville. And we'd love to catch up with you on Saturday.
Yeah, you got it. Come on up.
Thanks,
to the
Dom.
Dominguez and say hello.
Thanks so much, Dom, for coming on the show to talk about Dan Hurley's ball club and what should be a very entertaining game and electric atmosphere in Minji's later on today. There has been much talk in recent days about the Pirates season opener with Marshall being moved to week zero. So right now, let's hear from East Carolina AD John Gilbert on that and much more.
Well, as always, it's a lot of fun. We have a chance to sit down with this next gentleman, right, Bubba?
Yep, I always love having John Gilbert, Director of Athletics at East Carolina, on the show. John, welcome in.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. And first of all, I want to thank you for your transparency with From the Helm. I think that's been fantastic for, I think, Pirate Nation. And as AD, you got to be very happy for last weekend, which is incredible. A lot of great things going on in Pirate Nation right now.
Well, it is an exciting time. We had obviously a great weekend last weekend. It was, you know, fun to be a part of it with the amount of wins we got both at home and on the road, and just a great atmosphere where you could go from, you know, the basketball game to a baseball game, and just an exciting time to be a Pirate.
Yeah, it was a great weekend.
John, here about a week and a half ago, the 2020 football schedule was released. We've obviously known the opponents for quite some time, but finding those dates out is always exciting for Pirate Nation, and the announcement that came one day later is one that we're all excited about. the 50th anniversary of the horrific plane crash in 1970. So talk about that decision, and that's something that we have talked about on this show. Just whether it was week zero or Thursday night, we thought something may very well happen.
Well, I'm excited that it worked out, number one. Two, I think it is will be a great weekend of visibility for both institutions where we can celebrate that, you know, 1970s Marshall team. And, you know, as I began talking to our staff about it, I eventually reached out to Marshall to make sure that they were comfortable with it and would be, you know, agreeable to moving it up a week. And so everyone, it was in agreement. We committed to filing the waiver with the Football Oversight Committee. And so both the Football Oversight Committee approved it. It then went on to the NCAA for their approval. And, you know, once it was approved, obviously we announced it immediately. It'll be on August 29th, and it'll be televised on one of the ESPN linear channels. So excited about that visibility. I'm excited about, you know, ECU and Eastern North Carolina putting, you know, our best foot forward on a, you know, nationally televised broadcast where we can celebrate that team, but also celebrate East Carolina. And what a great environment and place that we have, and looking forward to having a full Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium.
Yeah, and it's only one of seven FBS games being played on week zero. I know probably the university doesn't have a lot of pull in this, but are you guys pushing for prime time?
Well, it'll be completely up to ESPN, and so I would say I would anticipate the game being played, you know, late afternoon, early evening window, but I don't know that for sure. That really is an ESPN decision.
How soon do you think we'll hear?
You know, I would hope that we would know, you know, sometime early summer once they finalize all their programming. I know there's some games on the West Coast. Yep. There may be an SCS game or two. And so I would think we'll hear at some point, you know, in the next month or couple months.
Okay. John, I had a question as far as the Marshall series itself. Is this a series that I know we have former AD for BCU, Mike Hamrick. Is this a series that we can – I know there's no specifics now, but can we have hopefully maybe another home and home with them in the near future?
Well, actually, on our – I don't know off the top of my head, but I'm going to look really quick. On our, you know, contract with Marshall, I know that it's for multiple games.
It's four games.
Yeah, four games. So I know that we'll play them, you know, the next 2 years, and then we pick them up again in 23 and 25. So we'll have three more opportunities to play Marshall after this year.
And on the scheduling lines, is there any? Are we close to signing a deal with anybody else? I know at one time there was a rumor out there that there was a home and home with the P5 that may be going to be announced. Is there anything new in scheduling for future schedules?
Well, we're working with a group of five school for a home and home, a team close to the region. We've got an FCS game that we need to schedule. The P5 series fell through. I think there was some reluctance on their part to come to Greenville, and I did not want you know, the game to be, you know, one-sided. You know, we got as far as discussing contracts, and in the contract language, the buyout when they came to Greenville was not high enough, in my opinion, and so we ended up walking away.
Okay. Well, there's a group of five just regional that we're looking at.
Yeah, you know, in an ideal schedule, you're playing, you know, a P5 school, a group of five school, home and away, and an FCS game.
Right.
For your schedule. And so in the years in question, that we need an additional, you know, group of five or FBS type game, you know, we're working with a regional school on doing a home and home, you know, that throughout, you know, the next several years. And then in 1 year, we need an FCS opponent, and working on those right now.
Was there any interest? I know we have a home and home with Boise, and we have a home and home with BYU. Is there any interest with any other group of fives from outside the area? One school that I've always had a fascination with playing because they recruit the Southeast so much is Colorado State. I don't know why. I always look. We recruit against them in football, particularly when Mike Bobo was the head coach. Have you ever had any conversations with anybody like that?
You know, not that far away. We haven't, you know, I think that certainly you can play a game like that, like one time. You know, I think in the, you know, 2026, 2027, we've got Boise home and home. You can do that once. I wouldn't want to make a regular diet out of that just for the expense of that type game.
I was going to ask that very question. As far as scheduling goes, obviously you want to have an attractive schedule for a nice segue for season tickets. How are you thinking season tickets? I know we opened up season tickets earlier as far as sales. How are things going so far?
Well, you know, we're trending in the right direction. Obviously, March, April, May are really big months for us from a season ticket standpoint. We are going to put a, you know, chart up, you know, kind of like the United Way type chart where everyone will get to see where our progress is. And so I really want to achieve the 16,000 threshold. Our season ticket, you know, number last year, while it was improved from the previous year, it's not really where we need to be from a competitive standpoint. And a lot of our funding for our programs comes out of season tickets. And so we really need to do a good job of trying to get to that, you know, 16,000 threshold in season tickets. We also need to sell single game tickets, and I do think moving the Marshall game to week zero will help in that regard. People will not have to choose between going to the game or going to the beach on Labor Day weekend.
And speaking of that, you know, I actually think moving it to August 29th is going to increase attendance a lot. I think the pop and circumstance around it, I think you have a lot of fans travel down from Huntington. But just in general, do you have any idea yet of what we're going to do? What kind of, I know we're going to make it a special night, but do you have something in mind yet? Are you and Ryan working on that of what we're going to do?
Well, I have a list, and since we started talking about this, you know, I've heard from people that have had great ideas. You know, there are a lot of ideas that we've come up with internally, and really what I want to do is my last discussion with Mike Hamrick was let's both get through basketball and then let's find a time where maybe we could come over to Huntington, spend a day with your staff and talk about the right way to celebrate the game. And I want to find the balance of doing a really good job of celebrating that team and the memory of that team and the family members, while also understanding it is still an ECU home football game and we need to win the game.
Absolutely.
And so there's a balance between the two, and I want to make sure that we, you know, thread the needle on that balance.
Yeah, honor the 1970 team, beat the 2020 team.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I saw I know there's no way anything we're going to consider, but I saw it suggested somewhere that we what was the term used? Make Greenville green. Everybody wear green in honor of the 1970 team game. Please don't do that.
Yeah, that's not on the idea list for me.
Good.
You know, I clearly think there are some ways that we can celebrate them, but, you know, we still want to win the game and we still want to create a home field advantage for our football team, and I think we can do a balance of both.
John, one of the things I saw on social media, on Twitter, I think it was along those lines, was the very fact of both teams maybe wearing throwback uniforms. Is that something difficult to do at this time?
I would say probably not realistic. You know, I can't speak to exactly what we're doing yet because we've not finalized that. We're still very much in the discussion mode. But I would think, you know, there will be some 1970 type things around the game. Do you all know what the number one song was in the country in 1970?
No clue.
Bridge Over Troubled Waters by Simon and Garfunkel.
All right.
Well, all right. I love the song.
I don't know that that song's going to get anybody fired up.
Hey, look, everybody's got their own taste in music, John. I prefer that to some of the stuff we do play.
I understand.
But speaking of things from 1970 being at the game, yes, Dave Richmond will be at the game.
That's good to hear.
Yes,
I definitely will. As far as let's talk some athletic facilities. Want to see if there's any update on anything. I know always with no matter where you work, there's obviously budget constraints. I know that full well. Are there any like talks as far as any more about the indoor practice facility, maybe some other things for the other sports?
You know, obviously, indoor practice facility is of great interest. I think, you know, obviously the funding model, we would have to, you know, have a solid plan on what that direction is. I think, you know, a new chancellor coming in, you know, is important for us as we look at what we do. We're just wrapping up the softball batting cages and closing those. So it's, you know, softball will have a really good place to hit indoors now. We still want to improve the branding around the athletic facilities. And so I would say at this point, nothing major going on, but a lot of little things from a branding type perspective.
Yeah. And how do you continue to upgrade and move forward and advance and do little things like that when there is some struggle financially? I mean, how tough is that? People want an indoor practice facility when we're still paying for Town Bank Tower.
Yeah, and you know, the reality is we're going to be paying on Town Bank Tower for a long time. And, you know, we've got to continue to figure that out from a financial standpoint. We've got to sell tickets and, you know, generate revenue to help fund those things. But we also can you know, rely on private giving for donors to help invest in some things. And fortunately at ECU, we have had the ability for donors to invest in us, and that's where a lot of this branding and other things have come from as of late.
And, I mean, Town Bank Tower was the first thing that I can think of that had a big corporate sponsor on it that wasn't named after a person. Is that something we're going to try to do moving forward more is have corporations put their names on things?
Absolutely. You know, we've got a couple other naming opportunities that, you know, trying to finalize. But, yes, we need you know, private donations. We need corporations to invest in us. I am thankful for Town Bank and the commitment that they made, you know, particularly at the time when they made it. It did show a lot of individuals in this region that, you know, we are still a worthy investment and we are trending in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely.
John, I wanted to bring up, obviously, we have our final men's home basketball game on Saturday against UConn, and so I've heard the ticket sales for that are ahead of where they typically are, so that was awesome to hear. But one of the things this year that I think you and the staff of Ryan Robinson, Eric Ward and company that have done a tremendous job with is the promotions, and you have the snow globes, you had the vintage coasters, and just some terrific giveaways that haven't necessarily been there in the past.
Well, we've got a really good external unit. We've got a lot of good people that work in our marketing department, our social media, and they are really creative and have done a good job of, one, generating some revenue, increasing fan entrance, interest. And then, you know, just making sure that it's entertaining when you come to the game. So I am thankful for that group and definitely think that they've helped spark some interest in basketball this year.
Yeah, I think of Ryan Robinson. He's running the Pirate Club right now. How is that coming, searching for a new Pirate Club leader?
Well, we haven't really begun the search yet. We're taking our time. I want to really make sure that we're on good, solid footing in the Pirate Club before we reach out. And so we're doing a lot of talking and listening want to make sure that we're doing the best that we can do internally before we bring an external candidate in.
John, I had a question as far as this weekend, very special. But we're all very excited about the Keith Clare Classic. Can you talk about maybe some festivities or certainly your thoughts on a huge weekend for EC baseball as well?
Well, obviously the Keith Clare Classic speaks for itself and what Coach meant to East Carolina, the university, and really this region, and his impact is alive still today with this baseball program. And you know, bringing in the caliber teams that we have with, you know, Indiana and Ole Miss and High Point and obviously East Carolina, should be a great weekend of baseball. We've got to take one game at a time. I think Saturday will be a great day of Pirate Athletics, where you'll be able to go to a men's basketball game at 2 o'clock versus Connecticut. Baseball's at 4:30, and then we have women's basketball at home for senior night against Tulane. So a lot to attend for Pirates this weekend, and excited about what the weekend holds for us.
John, and along the lines of baseball, something I kind of wonder in general about athletic directors. When you got a coach like Cliff Godwin, and Cliff's very well compensated, but he's somebody that's going to come up for SEC jobs every year because of the success he has and the ties to the conference he has as an assistant down there in the past. Do you, is that something you have to pay more attention to? Do you have a list of candidates you keep up with, or guys that, you know, hey, if Cliff leaves for a better job or perceived to be a better job, this is somebody we'd look at? Or do you just cross that bridge if you get there, and hopefully you don't?
Well, obviously, Cliff has achieved a high level of success here, and we want Cliff to be our head coach for a very long time, and want to continue to do things to help incentivize baseball. And Cliff has told me multiple times how much he, you know, loves being the head coach at East Carolina, and obviously with him being an alum and former letterman, I believe him. But you also have to be prepared that, you know, at some point, there may come a school that hires one of our coaches in any of our sports if they achieve a certain level of success. And as an athletic director, you always want to be mindful and prepared of, you know, a scenario like that, because they can come very quickly. And so in that case, I think you're always in your head thinking about, you know, a list of people for every sports program you have.
It's always a lot of preparation, for sure.
It is a lot of work and preparation.
Sorry, Dave, but I was just going to ask, while we're on baseball, here, I guess next weekend, the Pirates will be down in the Charlotte area taking on the 49ers, 3-game series. Obviously no home basketball going on. I think basketball is at UCF on Sunday, so will you be able to attend that series?
Actually, I'm right now on my calendar, I'm traveling with men's basketball to UCF is where I plan on being.
So that means you have to be at the game, Bubba. You live right near, close to Charlotte, so you have to
be representing the university, Bubba. And I guess, John, we're wrapping this up along the same lines of baseball schedule. And question I just thought of that I wondered about when looking at the baseball schedule and looking at spring game weekend. Is there a way? I mean, I think we've tried to schedule the spring game with Pirate Fest, but is there a way that the football staff and the baseball staff, any way they could get together and do the spring game in the future, the same weekend as a home baseball series?
There is, and I think a lot of it is, you know, where the calendar falls, where spring break falls in, how many days football gets in. Obviously, in an ideal situation, we'd love to have a home baseball game. And so we all recognize that, and we'll continue to work to make that happen.
Well, John, thank you so much. I know that you're busy with Keith LeClaire Classic. There's so many sports going on this weekend in Greenville. Thank you so much from all of Pirate Nation. I can speak for the transparency, your hard work. I know you and Ryan, they're putting in, and all the staff, many, many hours. And thank you for all that you've done over the last year and a half. And look forward to having you as AD for many years to come.
Well, thanks for having me, and go Pirates.
Thanks so much to John Gilbert for his time and willingness to come on the program to discuss East Carolina athletics. If you know anything about travel baseball, you've definitely heard of the Dirtbags. Last summer, we enjoyed talking with Trey Daly, East Carolina alum and GM of the Dirtbags. Well, we caught up with Trey on Thursday afternoon and discussed past, current, and future Pirates, and a whole lot more. Let's go to that conversation right now.
Well, baseball season is here, obviously, and Bubba, one of our most listened to podcasts, we're so glad to have this guy back on.
Yeah, we caught up with this guy last summer. I guess it was early to mid-June. And like you said, Dave, got a ton of listens. And I know folks enjoyed hearing from him. He's an East Carolina alum. But more importantly, the reason we had him on is because he's the general manager of the Dirtbags and one of the premier travel baseball organizations for sure. And welcome to the show, Trey Daly.
Oh, thanks for having me again, guys. I really enjoyed this conversation last year and look forward to talking some more baseball and East Carolina baseball as well.
No doubt about it. And I was joking with Bubba, like I told you off air, you can come on every single week if you want to, but we don't want to. I know you're very busy. Let's talk about certainly with travel baseball, and we can talk Pirates, any other state, North Carolina baseball, whatever you want as far as the state is concerned. I guess we can start off with home with East Carolina. What are your thoughts with East Carolina and with this, we'll talk about the number of guys you've got on the team that played on the Dirtbags, but let's talk, how are things looking for the Pirates so far?
Yeah, so I was, you know, with me living in the middle of the state and high school baseball starting up, I don't really get to watch the Pirates much, but I did get to see them at Elon the other night. And I told Jeff Colombo, the recruiting coordinator with East Carolina, the first thing I noticed about the kids that played for us that are now over at East Carolina, when I walked in, the first thing I noticed was how physical the kids have gotten, which hats off to their strength conditioning coach. I think it's Brandon Golden. But those guys have really been in the weight room. I mean, you know, Thomas Francisco, Bryson Worrell, even Ryder Giles, Garrett Saylor, all those guys, they're just so much more physical at this age. And from high school baseball to college baseball, the biggest difference is how strong kids are. And hey, those dudes in East Carolina's uniforms look the part.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And so let's talk specifically. I know there have been a lot of former Pirates that played for you guys, and then also current East Carolina players. And so who are some guys on the current roster that played for the Dirtbags at one time or another?
So we had out of 35, we had 19 of them. So, I mean, the guy I always start with is Ryder Giles, the shortstop at East Carolina. I remember when he actually didn't play for us this freshman year, and I heard wind of his name. So I went down to Union Pines. And it took me all of 3 ground balls to watch that guy field a ground ball and go, okay, that guy can really play defense. He played for another travel team, which is crazy, his freshman year, and they put him in the outfield. I'm not calling anybody out, but that guy is one of the best premier infielders I've seen since doing this. So the Pirates have got a good one at short.
And no doubt about it. I've had the opportunity to actually get to know that family a little bit. And his father, Rick, is an excellent guy. And I've enjoyed standing there talking to him some, watching the Pirates play over the last couple years. But in addition to Ryder, I know there are way too many to name because there's 19. But in the past, I know guys that definitely would come to mind that went on to, I know you, the Dirtbags organization, you've put close to 30 players in MLB. and Seth Maness and Mike Ryder, two of those that came through East Carolina.
Right, yeah. Those. So I was actually not involved with the Dirtbags at the time when those two came through. But I was coaching high school baseball, and I saw Seth Maness in the bullpen over at a high school in Greenville. And, you know, hats off to the guys at East Carolina and the pitching guys and the head coach over there at the time. Like, Seth Maness got better. And that's the key to all these guys, no matter who, you know, you go in with this big bullseye on your back, and you've got to live up to it. So, you know, hats off to those guys continuing to get better. That's the key to the whole, you know, travel circuit, college baseball, pro baseball, because eventually it's going to run out if you don't get better.
I want to ask you, as far as Trey, that very thing is that, as far as recruiting is concerned, East Carolina with baseball, the recruiting classes are just unbelievable. If you look at the last, what, handful of years, it's always been good. But you look at now, what do you think, what's the magic ingredient? Why is East Carolina so good as far as recruiting and getting the top-notch players?
Right. I don't want this to sound cliche and like I've got something with East Carolina, which I love the Pirates. I went to school there. My family bleeds purple and gold. But a lot of people give Cliff credit, which he deserves credit. The guy is just, he's got a high motor. He earns everything he gets. But I don't think enough people give Jeff Palumbo credit. You know, I've been lucky enough to do this for 8 years. And Jeff Palumbo, I would say this, if he was at Nebraska or if he was at Florida State or if he was at Richmond, I'm just throwing out some schools. Jeff Palumbo is one of the best in the business as far as communication, not only with the travel ball coaches, but as far as the players, setting up calls with the players. As you know, until your junior year, these guys can't call you, so they have to run everything through travel ball and high school coaches. And Jeff Palumbo, you know, this is just a little story. If Jeff tells a kid to call him at 8:30 and the kid calls him at 8:30, Jeff is going to answer, which – you know, Jeff's wife probably doesn't get enough credit, too, because of all the time he puts into this thing. I can only imagine being at the dinner table and you got some big recruit calling from Virginia and you got to answer. He answers. Like, it's unbelievable. I mean, he just doesn't get enough credit, not only from an identification standpoint of players, but as far as, you know, getting players to East Carolina, Cliff getting on the phone with them. I mean, it is an unbelievable staff they have there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And we talked about the heavy influx of Dirtbags to East Carolina over the years, including the current roster and moving forward. But just, I know you guys have been around. You've been involved for, what, 8 years now, Trey?
Yeah, 8 years. Going on
8 years. So I know the Dirtbags have been around since way back in 2002, so going on 2 decades of existence, and have put over 240 guys in professional baseball, and well over 1,000 have signed college scholarships. So just talk about some of those guys and the high-profile guys like Corey Seager, Dustin Ackley, Brian Goodwin, and Madison Bumgarner. How did I leave that one out? But
yeah.
And then some of the guys, besides those alums, if you will, the ones that you have headed to in-state programs now, be it UNC Wilmington, North Carolina, whoever, because there's so many great programs across the state.
Oh, there's plenty of good programs across the state. You know, let's not fool ourselves. Madison Bumgarner, Will Myers, Corey Seager, those guys are freak athletes. Like, you know, they could play for anybody. We were just very lucky to have them, and they established our program, and they continue to get better to this day, like I said, you know, a few minutes ago. Those guys helped us really take off, and we do it a little differently now. We get out and we watch the kids play, and we watch the kids play in North Carolina. And, you know, I'm looking at my schedule for next week and getting on the road start tomorrow. I'll be in South Carolina next week watching some of our kids play. But going back to your question, as far as, you know, Will, Corey Seager, all those guys were very, very talented. And they have been taking advantage of some opportunities that they were given at a younger age, and they have just succeeded. I mean, again, if you don't work, it doesn't matter how good you are. The game's going to run out on you. I mean, you look, I always use this name when I talk about dirtbag players getting better. Adam Warren is one of my best friends, and he's 4 years younger than me. But long story short, as a freshman in high school, if you had told me he would play in the big leagues, I would have bet my house on it. He's been in the big leagues 10 years now, and he was nothing but a 76 to 80 mile an hour right-hand pitcher as a freshman in high school.
Wow, that's amazing. So talk about the for people that are getting in, we talked about this before, I think last year you can listen to the first interview, but can you talk about travel baseball as far as kids and how they can go about getting started with that whole process?
Yeah, so, you know, travel baseball is, I want to say, I don't want to say it's a monster, but it really is. It's such a big environment for kids to play in. First of all, with travel baseball, you've got people out there, which is, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat, but you've got people out there that are trying to win championships. Now, don't get me wrong. I like to win just as much as anybody else. But then you've got some guys out there that are trying to get kids to college baseball. And I think that's where we differ from a lot of people. You know, we're going to win because we've got good players, but we want to develop these guys to be ready to be part of something when they get to college, no matter if it's Division One through Division Three, it's all about, or junior college, it's all about making the kids ready to be part of the program they're going in. You know, and with Cliff Godwin, I know the kids in our program really well. Well, Cliff always asked me, hey, who should I, you know, talk to? Who does Jeff need to get on? We talk often. And one thing, and Cliff, and you guys hear this, Cliff talks about toughness. Are these guys tough? Well, I'll tell you right now, if we don't have a guy that's tough and he's super talented, I'm not telling Cliff about him, because if you're not tough and you go to East Carolina, Cliff's going to swallow you up and spit you out. So you've got to be really, really tough to play for Cliff. And the guys that he's got there right now, I mean, they're tough kids that played for us.
Yeah, no doubt. And so I know you guys, Trey, teams 8 all the way up through age 18. You also offer softball. So talk about those teams and then other ways that people can find out about you as far as your website. And I know you have a podcast, et cetera.
Yeah, so our website is thedirtbags.com. And, you know, I actually do some individual lessons if kids want to try out for us. You know, I'm lucky enough. I can't thank Andy Parton enough for giving me this opportunity that I've had the last 8 years. But, you know, a lot of our stuff in the youth level, a guy named Everett Hancock, who played at UNCG, he's originally from Havelock, North Carolina, won a state championship there. He runs our youth stuff. Our middle school program, which is about 13U to 14U, Logan Koch, who played at the University of South Carolina and Francis Marion, he runs that. And then once they get into high school, I kind of oversee all that stuff. And, you know, our thing is with the Dirt Bags is we want to continue to make kids better. We're not going to take a pitcher out there and let him throw 115, 120 pitches in a weekend. We want the guys to be at their peak when they get to college. So, obviously, I'm looking at, like, for example, right now I'm looking at A.J. Wilson's picture on the East Carolina roster. And I remember when A.J. was a he was actually a sophomore, and we were playing in Fort Myers. And I had talked to Jeff before the game, and he said, look, man, he's like, I really want to see AJ's changeup during this game some. You know, I want to see him flash it. Now, obviously, down in Fort Myers, you want to win the game. So you've got to pick your spot. So I remember walking. We were at the Red Sox spring training place. And I remember walking to the mound in about the fifth inning, and we were winning like 10-3. And I got to the mound. I said, "Hey AJ, these next two pitches to this batter." It was like a 2-1 count. Like, and there was two outs, so there was nothing like to gain from it. And we were up big. I remember saying, "AJ, let's throw two changeups here." And he looked at me. He's like, "What are you talking about?" I'm like, "Trust me." I said, "Hey man, you want to earn a scholarship right now? Let's throw two changeups." Well, long story short, he threw two changeups for strikes, struck the dude out. Came off the mound, he's like, "Did you know something I didn't know?" And we kind of chuckled about it. But, you know, it's all about trying to make kids better and trying to put them in the right scenario so they can succeed at the next level.
Yeah, Trey, that's something kind of a similar story, and I'm certainly not bringing this up in a bragging way, but just piggybacking off your point as far as being able to throw other pitches and those, whether it's a changeup or a breaking ball in a fastball count like that. I remember one of my first years of coaching, I had a kid that he couldn't break a glass probably, but he was able to throw his curveball and changeup in those traditional fastball counts, and we're playing a pretty good team, and he was getting them out left and right, and through a complete game in a 7-inning game, only throwing probably no more than 70 or 75 pitches, and me and my assistant coach, we're just shaking our heads.
Yeah, and that's great you said, Bubba, because at the end of the day, pitchers to have success at the next level, they got to have pitchability. It's not so much just blowing fastballs by people and blowing up hitters. You got to be able to throw more than one pitch to play wherever you want to play at.
No doubt about it. In fact, Trey, I know that with that very fact, when they get to the high school level, but also college level, you look at a guy like Gavin Williams, I know that he's been working hard on getting another pitch or two, right? Or perfecting, I think he has pitches, but working on those more than just having a 96-mile-an-hour fastball.
No doubt. It's funny you bring up Gavin Williams. That is one name that I just can't get over myself on. When Gavin was a sophomore at Cape Fear High School, I remember going down there. You know, Gavin, he's 6'5", 6'6". He's a big guy. And he was hurt that game I went to. But I swear, and I talk about this often, I didn't see any 6'5" or 6'6" guy in that dugout. Like, that one, like, baffles me because I feel like I have North Carolina High School baseball in the palm of my hand and knowing where players are. But Gavin, I never saw Gavin in high school, which is crazy. He was hurt, but I just want to think he wasn't at that game.
Yeah, and I want to say now that once you did find out about Gavin, like, I know coming out of high school, because obviously his freshman year at East Carolina in that series against the Tar Heels at the DBAP, it was well noted on social media how he hit triple digits a time
right.
or two.
Yeah.
So back when he was at Cape Fear, any idea how hard he was throwing then? Was he like a 96 guy? Or
when he was at Cape Fear, as crazy as it sounds, he was an upper 80s guy. Now he might have touched 90, but he was more of an upper 80s guy. So again, we talked about strength and the guys being in shape and all that earlier. That's a big key to it once they get to college, and that helps the velocity and whatnot. Now I'll tell you this: talking about a pirate that never made it to campus. I remember watching Mackenzie Gore. He was 14 years old, and I was coaching Turner Brown's team at 15 years old. And Mackenzie threw against us at it was one of the Brunswick County schools we were playing at in the middle of nowhere down there. He was 14 now. Now, we won the game, but Mackenzie Gore at that time was like – at 14 now, he was like 75-80. And he diced us.
Oh, my God.
I mean, absolutely diced us. And thank God he got off the mound so we could win the game. But he was good.
Yeah. Are there can we talk about future Pirates that are coming to – they're on your roster now that are coming to East Carolina?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I'm going to start where, you know, we were lucky enough this fall to have Josh Moreland from Maryland. Big left-handed hitter, 6'4", 230. Now, that guy's got some serious juice. He's got a chance to really hit the middle of the lineup at East Carolina moving forward. So that's a good bat to come in. Cohen Moreno, he is anywhere from 92 to 95 right now. He's getting some draft interest, obviously. But Cohen's a guy that's played in our program for 4 years. He started when he was in eighth grade. And he's played every position on the diamond. And finally, he figured out he was a pitcher. And he's got a chance to make some money one day being that pitcher. Hopefully, he gets on campus before that. The kid I really like, obviously, I like those two. Cameron Clutch, I remember telling Cliff about him younger in his career. And Cliff came and watched him at Lewisburg High School. And Cam's a two-way guy. I know Cliff talks about hashtag two-way you, but Cam's going to be able to do both. The game Cliff came to, not only did he pitch, But he hit a jack in the right field at Lewisburg. I mean, it was well out of here. So Cameron Clunch is a guy. Danny Beal is a guy that can really pitch. He's going to be anywhere right now from 86 to 90. And the strength program is really going to help him. He's coming out of Reagan High School where Garrett Saylor's from. CJ Boyd is a kid coming out of Reagan High School as well. He's a very versatile kid. I found CJ during a high school game 2 years ago, and the reason I found him was that his arm strength was so much superior to everybody else. I didn't even see him hit to start with. I saw him throw a ball from third base to first base, and I was like, that guy's got a good arm. So he's been up to like 92 on the mound. Now he needs to work on some other pitches, which he doesn't pitch much, but he's very versatile. He can play any position on the diamond. So he's a good player that's coming in there. And one of my favorites going in there. Now, I don't know if he's going to, like, make an impact there because they're getting so good, but he is definitely going to work and make somebody work harder, and that's Garrett Chandler. I was lucky enough to coach Garrett for 2 years, and this guy is like Cliff Godwin mold. He works out at 5 a.m. every morning, and then he works out after baseball practice. So
Wow. He's
got a motor that doesn't stop. So he like I said, it'd be interesting to see what happens at East Carolina, but I know the kid's not going to get outworked, which is awesome for Cliff.
Trey, I want to ask you I'm sorry, I thought you were done.
No,
I was going to ask you about the very fact of something that I'm glad you said. I've already forgotten about it, but can you talk about the impact of the game as far as having two-way players? I have never seen so many two-way. I think it's six on the roster this year for East Carolina, but it's amazing to me. I was telling Bubba, it's almost like watching Little League, having all these guys that can pitch, that can play different positions, is a real big asset.
It's funny you say that because I'm talking college baseball across the scheme. When coaches recruit players, now, look, every pitcher out there thinks they can hit, and every position player thinks they can pitch, but none of them really can do it. So when college coaches recruit players, they always talk about, hey, we'll give you a chance to hit. We'll give you a chance to hit. And normally they go in the fall and they get a couple at bats and then they have to stick to pitching. Or, you know, they get in the field, they give them a couple innings, and then they go back to the field. So the two-way U is funny because Cliff is actually sticking to his guns when he says that. He's telling the kids what they want, not only what they want to hear, but he's holding up to what he's telling them. So, and you don't find that much this day and time. I mean, we're talking about two-way players right now in this 2020 class coming in. I mean, I just saw Landon Ginn throw the other day, and his velo was up to 92 and hit a jack from the left side. And I'll say this on the record. If Cameron Clunch can adapt to Cliff Godwin's system and how tough he is, he's got a chance to be just as good as Burleson, if not better. And I know that's singing high praises, but I've seen both the kids at this age, and I coached both the kids between Burleson and Clunch. And Alec Burleson's a hell of a player, but Cameron Clunch, he's got a chance to do stuff really special at East Carolina.
Well, that makes me happy because we want to see you out in Omaha, and there's a lot of great people that have East Carolina ties. And I know you deal more than just East Carolina with being the general manager of the Dirtbags, but I can't wait to that moment. My bosses already know that when I don't take the time off, but they know that whenever we do finally make it to Omaha, I have extra money aside. I'm not booking the hotels. I'm not taking time off. Normally not Mr. Superstitious, but when it comes to Omaha, I definitely am.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've already told my wife when they get to Omaha, it's going to be like, all right, we're going out there for a little bit. You know, it's eventually going to happen. Baseball is a tough sport, so you don't know when it's going to happen. But I know as long as Cliff and Jeff and Dietrich are there, they got a chance. They got a chance every year because they're going to be tough kids. And, you know, at the end of the day, the most talented team normally wins the game. I know Cliff's going to hate me saying that. But tough kids win games too. So, you know, that's just a little bit of, you know, East Carolina's perception of Omaha.
And, Trey, it's like I've told people, when the Pirates go to Omaha, obviously, like you said, it's a,
it's an ordeal. I mean, it could last 3 or 4 days for you. Hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully it's going to be lasting more like 2 weeks or maybe a little over 2 weeks. So it's something that I told my dad and people that when we go, I said, I don't care if I have to sleep in a tent for 2 weeks. That as long as I'm in Omaha, I could care less.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, you know, I'm a big East Carolina guy, as you guys well know. And, you know, in the middle of our summer season is our peak time. I mean, you know, the spring season in high school ball is about to crank off, and I'll see about 100 teams play. But the summer is our big season, and if I can guarantee you if East Carolina gets there, I will be flying out to watch at least one game, even if it's for one day, because I will empty my savings account to be there to watch those guys play.
No doubt about it. It's going to be exciting.
Dave, I know Trey's been very generous with his time, but something we want to mention right here before we let you go is let's give some love to the other guys with the dirt bags that you have headed places for 2020, 2021, and talk about some of those others that you have committed, whether it's to in-state programs or regional or national.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, if you got – and this is for any listener out there. If you got, and if you guys have a chance to do this, you need to treat yourself and go to a Garner High School baseball game this year, because you're going to see a young man by the name of Nolan McLean, who's a senior at Garner. He's going to be up to around 96 on the mound, and he is going to probably, if they don't pitch around him, he's probably going to hit about 10 home runs this year at Garner. He is an absolute freak. He's committed to Oklahoma State, but I'll be honest with you guys. Now, he's committed to play football and baseball. I personally think he's a so much better baseball player. He's going to have a chance to go in the major league draft. But he's going to be a guy that if the stars align like they should align, that he'll be in the show here in probably less than 5 years. So that's a guy definitely in the state of North Carolina I would see as his senior year is Nolan McLean at Garner. He played for us for 4 years. So we had him when he was in, you know, going into ninth grade, which we're very lucky to have. In the 2020 class, besides Nolan, we've got some guys that, you know, they're going to in-state places. Not only Division I, but Division II, Division III. A bunch of our guys are going to East Carolina, but, you know, we've got a kid by the name of Ryan Wilson, who is a right-hand hitter at Jordan High School. He's going to Davidson, and he's a really good hitter. And Davidson got a great get from him. Jack Hicks is a left-hand hitter from Leesville. He's going to Kentucky with Dan up there. We've had a kid by the name of Colby Wilkerson at Carvance, who's going to the University of North Carolina. Now, here's a good one. Ben Soraki from Rocky Mount, right down the road from East Carolina. Really smart kid. He got most valuable pitcher, which is, I know it's a trophy and MVP, but he got the most valuable pitcher in the biggest tournament of his career in Jupiter this past year. And he's going to Elon. Now, this guy faced two of the best hitters in the country that will be drafted in the first two rounds, and he diced those dudes up. From the Orlando Scorpions. So that's an intriguing arm Elon's getting. He's going to be anywhere from 88 to 91 with a really good slider. And, again, he's from Rocky Mount, so he's right up the road.
Did you say he's a lefty or righty?
He's a right-hander. He's got the high spin rate, what everybody talks about, but that guy could really, really pitch. And, you know, we got a kid from New Bern by the name of Declan Champy. He's going to Mercer. And this guy throws from about a three-quarter arm slot, and he's anywhere from 84 to 88, and he just sinks the baseball. He gets a bunch of weak contact, and he just gets people out. I mean, like Ryder Giles, you know, he pitched a little bit for us, and he don't throw the ball over 80, but he just dices people up.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Ryder has already come through on a few occasions this year for East Carolina.
Yeah, he's Ryder's. Like I said, when I went and watched Ryder take those three ground balls and was like, I called my boss Andy and was like, all right, this is like too good to be true. There's an infielder in the Oakland Athletics system right now. I can't remember his name. He perfect game ranked in the number one shortstop in the 2019 class. And I'm going to, 2018 class. And I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say that Ryder was just as good. Nick Allen's his name. Ryder was just as good defensively as Nick Allen was. And he was the best infielder in the country, according to Perfect Game.
Wow. That's certainly high praise indeed.
Yeah, you just don't teach that stuff. I mean, that guy's just, I coached Turner Brown. I was lucky enough to coach Ryder, but those hands are really soft, like, ground balls, and watch him make a couple errors the next game because I'm building them up. But he's a special kid, man, and he's a tough kid. I give him a little stuff about that tattoo he's got now. So
it's funny you bring that up, Trey, because I hadn't heard anything about it. I mean, I don't guess there's really any reason why I would have, but, the opener against William & Mary, I think Ryder doubled, and Corey Glore, play-by-play voice of the Pirates, said that when Ryder slid in the second, and he hopped up and he did his thing, flexing, and Corey said, I guess he's showcasing that new Pirate state of mind tattoo that he got since 2019.
No doubt. Look, his dad's got the same tattoo. So you'll have to tell Rick, hey, let me see that tattoo next time you see him.
Gotcha.
So,
I had
Rick
not heard
it
that.
To me the other day, so I kind of laughed about it. So there's three people that have it: Rick Giles, Ryder Giles, and Shane Carden. So there you go. You got a threesome right there.
One of my best friends who went to East Carolina, Nate Cobble, who's in the construction business, he has one as well. He got
okay,
his.
So we,
I'm trying to remember. I think he actually had his before Shane, but nobody knew it because he wasn't an athlete and didn't have the opportunity to flex it on national TV.
No doubt. That's hilarious. Yeah, that's I was kind of joking with Ryder the other day about it, and Rick was like, hey, I got one too. I'm like, yeah, right. And he showed it to me. I'm like, ah. So, but, going out to Elon and watching those kids the other night, they were good for us. The kids that played for us, obviously, they were good. But the guys continue to make strides, and that's what baseball is all about. The guys, like I said, Brandon Golden has got the guys physical. I mean, Bryson Worrell is a physical specimen. I mean, I talked to his dad the other night at the game, and he's just so much physically bigger than he was. And he's a tough kid. So, again, if a kid comes through the dirt bags and I find a kid on the road that I know that's a tough kid, I'm going to tell Cliff and the staff about him. At the end of the day, doing this job, I'm just trying to help kids, man. No matter if they go to East Carolina, North Carolina, NC State, Barton College, it's all about trying to help people in this business.
Right. And like you say, I mean, it's not like you're twisting some kid's arm to go to East Carolina. East Carolina has a lot to offer in terms of its baseball program.
No, absolutely. I'll say this on the record as well. Billy Godwin did a great job at East Carolina, taking nothing away from Billy, but the recruits Cliff and Jeff and Dietrich are getting at East Carolina are really good. And, when you look at the grand scheme of college baseball, Cliff Godwin's one of the best recruiters, but you're only as good as the people you surround your staff with. And, again, Jeff Palumbo does not get enough credit for what he does.
No doubt about it. I'm very fortunate to have Coach Palumbo, and no matter where it is, and I certainly expect to see Coach Palumbo get a head job sometime down the road. Hopefully that's not too soon, though, because we certainly want to keep him in Greenville as long as we can. But,
yeah, I think Cliff's going to do everything possible to keep that guy. I mean, Cliff is a smart guy. He's a hardworking guy. He doesn't put up with a lot of stuff, but he knows that Jeff does so much for the program. He's going to do everything he can possible. Cliff will give his shirt off his back to keep Jeff Palumbo.
Absolutely. Like you're saying, I know that in recent years with the success we've had, that obviously we're just quite simply not going to be able to pay what some programs like Alabama or Mississippi State will pay, but we're doing everything we can from everything I gather to sweeten the deal of both Cliff and his his staff.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and Cliff, and I think Cliff having his parents right down the road and being familiar with the area, I think there's a lot more to offer with Cliff, just East Carolina, even though he loves East Carolina. I think he just loved being in Eastern North Carolina. I think that's a lot to do with it as well. I mean, you know, Cliff's had plenty of opportunities, and he's going to have other opportunities. But, you know, I knew Cliff when he was a player there, and Cliff's the same guy. I tell everybody, Cliff's the same guy I knew when he was a player at East Carolina. He hadn't changed a bit.
No doubt. Trey, we really appreciate you staying as long as you did. You've been very generous,
Trey.
And we'd love to have you back on here down the road as we move throughout baseball season.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like I said, you know, starting tomorrow, I'm going to be on the road probably four days a week watching high school baseball. So anytime you guys want to get me on the show, I'll be riding the road to North Carolina and South Carolina watching kids play. So I'll be in the car for a while, just listen to the radio if you guys ever want to get me on the show again.
All right, keep it between the lines, and don't drive too fast, and we definitely will. Appreciate you, Trey, very much. Enjoy the visit once again.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys, so much for having me.
That does it for episode 285 of the Sports Objective Podcast. Thanks so much to our guests, Dom Amore of the Hartford Current, East Carolina Athletics Director John Gilbert, and Trey Daly, General Manager of the Dirtbags. Remember, later on tonight, we will have overtime as we will reflect on the Pirates' home finale with UConn. Also, episode 3 of Extra Innings will be available on Sunday night as Coach O, Dr. Gary Overton, East Carolina color analyst alongside Corey Glore and the all-time winningest coach in Pirate baseball history will join us to reflect on the week that was in East Carolina baseball. We appreciate you listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Remember, you can listen to our show pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, Audio Boom, Blog Talk Radio, you name it, you can probably find us there. Remember to follow us on social media, on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ, on Instagram at TheSportsObjective. Like and follow us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Again, we appreciate you tuning into the show, and as always, go Pirates!
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.